There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome to today in Midday Mobile. I'm your host, John, Mr. Mobile Young. So don't adjust your dial. This is not Sean Sullivan. He's finishing his community service at Angola Prison, sweeping the bathroom floors. We can't get into why he's doing community service. Just know that he'll be back soon. You know, before I get to my very esteemed and prestigious guest, I want to comment on the heat. It is hotter than Lizzo's armpits at a seafood boil. It is just rude, disrespectful heat, and I've had enough of it. I don't know what else we can do, but I am tired of this rude heat. Let's get right. First, I want to offer a correction. The Men United Against Violence billboard went up at Spring Hill Avenue and Moffitt Road. I posted on Facebook that it was Spring Hill Avenue and Broad Street, but it is, it's Moffitt Road. I am just so happy to have the guest on today. We've been trying to get them on for a while. Chief Mobile Police Department Chief of Police Randy Jackson and Assistant Chief of Police Melvin Jones Jr. Thank you guys for coming to Midday Mobile.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
This is a time to celebrate. This is a positive story. This has nothing to do with rabbits. This has everything to do with the crime stats. Chief, tell us about the Part 1 crime stats from last year.
Yeah, you know, last year we ended the year again doing very well. We were down most double digits in almost all Part 1 crimes. With exception of vehicle thefts, we were up 1%. We were, like every other department pretty much in the nation, were hit with the TikTok challenge, which was a senseless challenge where juveniles were really too manufactured. I won't name the vehicles, but two specific models that were targeted just for a challenge to steal the vehicle. And sometimes they only took them a few streets and dumped them just to show them TikTok they did it. So we ended up 1% up in the vehicle thefts. But if you look at our vehicle thefts overall, the TikTok challenge accounted for 11% of our overall stolen vehicles.
Right.
So if we didn't have that TikTok challenge that hit us like it did many other places, then we would have been down nearly double digits in that as well.
But people are interested in the homicide rates, the robberies, and the thefts, Chief.
Right.
Are those numbers down as well?
Yes. Yeah. We ended up 16% down in homicide, 11% down in robbery, 11% down in aggravated assaults. And, you know, like I said before, we're doing extremely well. But if you're a victim of one of those crimes, these numbers don't mean much to you. You know, but we have a targeted approach. It's not a blanket thrown over everything. You know, we target specific individuals to try to keep our crime low.
And Chief Jones, that is a specific statement. When he says target, it's like intelligently aggressive. You're finding the suspects and going after them.
Absolutely, because you know only about 5 to 7% of the people that people commit the 80% of the crime. So what we try to do is target those, use the data that we collect during our assessment, and try to go target those recidivists and also people that are committing crimes, so that we can keep our crimes low.
All right, wonderful. Chief Jackson, what role has the community played in this? Or is this just pure police work going out, finding the guys and arresting them? Has the community been involved in this?
No. There's been some exceptional police work done, don't get it wrong.
Right.
But we can't do anything without the cooperation of the public. And, you know, you hear me say that all the time, that, you know, especially if you are a victim of crime, then these numbers may not mean that much to you. But for the mass majority, it does mean a lot. And it means that the community trusts us, they're talking to us, they're calling us, because we can't be everywhere all the time. And you're going to see things happen that are going to affect you or your community. But if you don't let us know, we can't intervene and we can't help fix it. So we definitely have to have that cooperation and participation from the public.
And just like Chief Jones said, Chief Jackson, that if you intelligently direct your attention towards the aggressor, then you're not pulling over or accosting a guy walking home from work. You're more focused on who you're looking for, which builds community involvement and community trust, right?
That's absolutely correct. And that's absolutely the approach we take with our intelligence-led policing, is we know who we're going after, whether, like Chief Jones said, whether they're a recidivist offender, or if we monitor stuff at the juvenile level extremely well, to where if we can tell that that particular person has a propensity to fall into that category, then we try to intervene early. Sometimes it doesn't work, but when it does, it's beneficial, and when it doesn't, we know where to start from as well.
Chief Jones, the perception of safety sometimes matters more than reality. The numbers are down, but when you have two shootings on yesterday, on Tuesday, even with victims coming to police headquarters, and the story I heard was two people got shot at headquarters, So the perception sometimes is what we're combating, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And people got to understand that perception of violent crimes comes from, you know, experience, sometimes media, sometimes pushes it a lot, but it doesn't exactly match the numbers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exactly match the data.
It
just looks bad, correct. So, you know, I would definitely encourage, and just like Chief Jackson said, that if you're a victim, you know, the numbers don't mean anything, but I would definitely encourage anyone to, you know, pull up the stats, go to the Mobile City org site and just pull up the stats and see what it looks like.
Because what's going to be on the TV all the time, Chief Jackson, are the victims, right? They're going to, and then cut away from it. They don't come back and do a follow-up on the investigation. They just say, you know, the sack and pack got robbed, and we don't ever get a follow-up on it. So sometimes the perception of it, what they're being promoted, isn't always the reality.
That's true. That's correct. And to Chief Jones's point also, as far as the media goes, a lot of times what's initially reported isn't what it turns out to actually be.
Right.
We see that with the emails that just come to us initially from the call itself. And then when supervisors get on the scene and send us out another update, it's not what it came out to be. But there's many times that you can look at social media and you can see a story on social media, mm-hmm. and you can think something bad or violent has happened here, only to open it up and find out it happened somewhere across the country. But right. it plays on our local media as well. So perception to most people is reality, but we do our best to try to curtail it as much as possible.
And that's the part of law enforcement I think a lot of people miss. If they don't see the officers out there turning corners and their presence deters crime, or the officer getting out of his car and having a conversation that encourages a kid to go in school, those are the things that you can't really measure, and you can't put those into your crime data, right? So what else can you tell us? I know there's a lot of moving parts to the crime, but who else is helping you guys in this downward turn of crime? I know nationally it's occurred, but are you working with federal agencies, social agencies? Who else is involved in this recipe for success?
Yes, yeah. We work well with our federal partners, or other state and local partners. We have a luncheon every month. I know you have the sheriff on next month. He usually hosts it with all of our state and federal partners come together. We talk about current events. We talk about current trends. We talk about what we need from the prosecution side. And they're always there, ready and willing to prosecute. So, yes, we work with all assets possible, along with the community. And going back to the violent crime, you know, we ended the year just down, over 12% down in violent crime.
12%?
Yeah, a little over 12% down in violent crime. Overall crime was down 11%, but violent crime was down 12%.
Okay, we're coming up on our break. We'd love to get some phone calls and text messages for the Chiefs. 251-343-0106. Midday Mobile with your host, Mr. Mobile, Sean Sullivan. We'll be right back after you finish mopping those floors.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. right, we're back. Midday Mobile with your host, Mr. Mobile. I'm filling in for Sean Action Man Sullivan. It's a long story about where he is and why. But we have the Chief, Mobile Police Department Chief of Police, Chief Randy Jackson, and Assistant Chief Melvin Jones, and we're talking about the decrease in crime, especially violent crime in the city. I know it's a national trend, but we're also experiencing that here, Chief. An issue came up I read online and heard earlier from Dalton that we're asking for, the department is asking for more police. So you've done these numbers. You've decreased this crime over the year with how many police officers?
Well, right now we're sitting at about 505. Uh-huh. We're budgeted for 516. Mm-hmm. We just started an academy on Monday. But, yes, we're asking for another 15 to try to move us up to 531. We feel like before the end of this year we'll already have hit our 516 budget. Right. And so we're looking to increase that in the next budget as well.
Well,
it bodes well to the community. You see more police. The response times are better. But for the men and women that show up for roll call that night, when they sit down in a roll call room and they look around and they see three or four guys versus getting in a roll call and seeing eight or ten, it makes a difference for them as well. I tell this story in service every week. A few weeks ago, one of our guys came back from military leave. He'd been gone for over a year. And Chief Jones came to me and said, hey, when he left here, he was in the third precinct. He said, but I'm full in the third. Can I put him in the first? And I looked at him crazy. He said, I know. I never thought I'd say we were full in the third, but we're full. And right. So that's a great luxury because then it allows us to backfill some of the investigative positions that have long been overdue short. So, yeah, we're moving in the right directions as far as manpower. And for the community, just to be able to see that officer more, be able to see more vehicles in their neighborhood, turning the blocks, as you said, and making the corners and being seen, it's significant for them. And it's also a deterrent. Just the fact that the police presence is there alone is a deterrent for the crime.
Right. So, Chief Jones, that boosts morale in the squad room, in the roll call room, when they see an entire squad of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, think about it. You know, when you are down in manpower like that, you are you're taking up a couple of beats, not only yours, but, you know, you're also having to move to other beats to try to make things work. Right. So but you got that. Those guys come in, those new officers come in, and it does. It builds morale. I mean, it's huge. It's a force multiplier in itself.
Well, because now they know they can probably get a cold drink or sit down and rest for a while, catch up on the reports because they're not running from one call to another.
Absolutely. And also, too, these officers love their beats. So they love spending more time in their beats. Mm-hmm. You know, that way we can they can be a bigger look in their beat, actually hitting that beat like they want to hit that beat.
I can dig it.
Specifically in that beat.
You gave me flashbacks. Let's transcend to curfew. I'll start with you, Chief Jones, about the curfew. It is in effect right now, right?
Yes. The curfew downtown and entertainer district is set. If you're 17 or younger, you can't be down there after the hours of 10 p.m. to 05 or 5 a.m. in the morning without a parent or guardian.
And with an emphasis on teenagers or young people, because in my opinion, there's a difference between 13 and 18.
Yes,
mentally.
Absolutely.
But with an emphasis on that, that should deter crimes downtown, right?
Yeah, it does. It takes a huge bite out of crime. And reason being is because a lot of times, you know, the curfew was put in place to really be safety for the kids. Sometimes these kids come down and kids be kids. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them and what we're asking the parents is just know where your children are.
Right.
Right. Know where your children are. And that's huge in itself. And it does. It really does help us decrease crime downtown.
Chief Jackson, Chief Jones just mentioned that parents should play a more active role in knowing what their kids are doing. You grew up at a time that there was no such thing as locked doors that your parents couldn't go
That's
through
right.
your notebook. We didn't have cell phones, but your parents knew more about you because they were going through your notebook and your book bag. Can we do that today with our children?
Right, absolutely. And that's what I've said before is know your children, know who your children's friends are. If it's someone you know they shouldn't be with, don't let them be around them. It's your house. It's your bedroom. Check that bedroom. Check the phone. You're paying the phone bill. Look in the book bag. Know where they're at. Know what they're doing. Be a part of their life. Right. Don't just open the door and let them come and go as they please, because that leads to bad things.
Knowing what your child is doing on social media, we talked about it earlier, that they're planning fights.
Right.
you know.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. Yeah, they plan the fights and they broadcast exactly where they're at. I mean, you can go back to the shooting that happened on Dolphin Street a few years ago on New Year's Eve. He knew exactly where he was coming to. He knew exactly where the person he was looking for was at. And there were police officers within 5 or 6 feet. But he knew what he was coming there to do, and no one else did, and he came to do it.
Pull up is what they call it.
Absolutely.
Right? Sanger Theater, the same thing, right? This guy...
Well, the Sanger Theater was a little different. That was more of a domestic situation between ex-spouses and spouse.
But they were familiar with each other.
But they knew each other. Right. And that's the thing. We don't see, knock on wood, thankfully, a random violent crime. I mean, we've seen some here or there. We had the young lady killed at Sage Park a couple of years ago, which was extremely tragic. And she was a completely innocent victim. But two rival members, you know, acting out cost her life. But for the most part, everything that we see is known to one another.
All right. So there's a new captain downtown.
Yes.
I've known him since I've been on. Ernie Trubig is the new captain down there. With you saying that many of these crimes are pre-planned, what was your direction for him when you said, all right, go, this is our entertainment district, you are now leading it?
Right, yeah. So we sat down and had a conversation a little over a week ago. With Ernie and let him know that Downtown Entertainment District is about communication. It's about knowing the people and about being involved with the people. So Ernie's first marching orders were to get out there and know the business owners.
Right.
Let them have your cell phone number so they can call you when they have issues, they have problems that we need to address, and to address them and address them immediately. And
right.
So I spoke to him yesterday in the parking lot at headquarters as he was leaving, and he's already begun that. He's already told me about all the people he'd already met and all the phone numbers he's already given out. So that way the communication's there. That way they know they have a direct line to the person that's in charge down there. Because,
right.
I mean, he's running his own little city right there.
Right.
And he could be very influential. Chief Garrett, who was a former captain down there, and he was in the meeting we had, and he told him, he said, man, you could be so instrumental in that entertainment district if you just get involved. And we already see he's doing so.
That's wonderful. Chief Jones, when we talk about leadership on the department and somewhere, the entertainment district is where people see what Mobile is.
Yes, yes.
What do you have to say to people visiting downtown Mobile?
I'll tell people to visit downtown Mobile to enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. Be cognizant of what's going on around you. Take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones and people that you're downtown with. And just be smart. Just be smart. We have police on police downtown, so that's the great thing. And I want you to understand that you are safe downtown, and I want you to feel safe downtown because MPD, we're doing what we do downtown.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do is just get our – 2 minutes left. That's what we're trying to do is get the message out now. Chief, with our final 90 seconds, what is your message to Mobile going forward through this summer? Just getting us through the summer before school starts. What is our message to Mobile as a whole?
Right. So I guess my message would be that, know you're safe. Please get out and participate in the things that the city of Mobile has to offer all over the city. There's always things going on, whether it's downtown, West Mobile. It doesn't matter. There's always events. We know we've been doing good, but we know there's always work to do. We're going to be there. If you need us, please call us. If you're one of the people that are in a type of an altercation and can't settle it yourself, please let us intervene before you become a victim or become, one that has to be arrested.
Right.
So our biggest message is we're here for you 24/7. If you need us, we're coming. And the people of Mobile should feel safe.
And we're not resting on, you're not resting on this past year, this decrease in crime. You're trying to get it down another 10%.
Absolutely. Like you see, we're down 11% this year. That's over what we were down last year.
Right.
And so, yes, we want to see that trend to continue, and we're going to continue doing the things we do, what we talked about, the targeted approach, the way we address crime, target-wise, to where we're taking that offender off the street. We're going to continue to do those things. And so anything that the citizens of Mobile need, we're here.
We're open up. You're open up to suggestions and ideas on what could help, right?
Absolutely. You know? I mean, I tell my staff all the time, I don't know everything. If you know something, bring it to me.
Wonderful. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Chief Jackson. Thank you, Chief Jones. We're coming up on our midday break. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. In our last segment, we had a conversation with the chiefs of police, William Randy Jackson, and Chief Melvin Jones, and we talked about the decrease in violent in crime overall, but especially violent crime here on the Gulf Coast, in our city. And it's just a reminder of what we can accomplish when we work together as a team. I always say that we share the port city. When I talk on my show, I speak about the port city as a whole and not as West Mobile, Spring Hill, Down the Bay, Crichton, Trinity Gardens, because the same Airport Boulevard runs all the way from, well, Government Street runs all the way from Water Street to Mississippi, and Airport Boulevard runs from Midtown to Mississippi, and all of us drive these roads and we share it all. So our city will only be as clean and as safe as we make it. And I include clean in that because cleanliness makes your city look better, which makes it look less criminally, or that may not be a word, but that's something we can all play a role in. We can pick up trash. We can not throw our diapers in the Dollar General store parking lot. We don't have to. We can call in police and report criminal behavior. We can be good witnesses and say, that's who did it right there. Because the city will only grow as much as we work together and make it grow or allow it to grow. No one part is responsible for everything. Having the chiefs on and explaining what some of the things the department is doing to decrease crime, and saying that the department is working well with the public is great, but that has to continue. It can't ever get to the point where it's someone else's job or someone else's responsibility. And speaking about that, I mentioned at the top of the hour, at the start of the show, Men United Against Violence billboard. By the way, call in and let's hear what you have to say, 251-343-0106. Whether something that the chief said previously or something you want to ask me, and I'm not telling you where, you know, what Sean did to get his state probation, but if you want to ask something or make comments, 251-343-0106. But back to responsibility, our billboard went up at Spring Hill and Moffett Road yesterday. Big thank you to Susan Stieber and those guys at Lamar Signs. Thank you for everything you do. And it states, your children are your responsibility. And it is a message directly to the parents. This is a reminder. We use billboards because it's like advertising. Coca-Cola or a hamburger or whatever else, they have billboards up so that when you drive by, you see it, and hopefully it plants a seed for you to desire that. So our idea is to plant a seed that people will desire to be involved in their lives. You know, talking to the chiefs about the curfew downtown, there shouldn't be a law. It shouldn't be required a law to tell you to watch your children if they're juveniles. There shouldn't require a law to tell someone to pull up their pants. These are decency. These are things that should be taught at home and everyone should understand. There shouldn't be a law required to tell you to turn your music down between the hours of 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. There shouldn't be a law to tell you not to litter, not to loiter. But that's where we reached in our society, is that so many people have become so used to being dictated to and told what to do that they no longer want to think for themselves. And that's why we are returning the emphasis back to parents. When you see a 17-year-old in downtown Mobile at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Monday night being arrested, the bigger question, the first question should be, is why are you even there? before the question is, well, why did they arrest him and why did they have to throw him down and pick him up? The question should be, why were you there? The question should be, parents, did you know your son was here? And that sometimes, most times, many times, we fail to ask. We've failed to hold the parents accountable, and I regret I didn't. I forgot to ask. I had written it down in my notes to ask the chief, will there be any enforcement against the parent? I don't know the legal ramifications of how that's possible, but until we begin holding these parents accountable, then we will continue seeing degenerate, delinquent juveniles, and I mean as young as 12 or 13 years old, engaged in loud, rude, violent behavior. And that's just a failure in parenting. And there was once upon a time that you would be ashamed to embarrass your family. If you were arrested, or if you were kicked out of school, or if you were in the mall fighting, but that shame has to be returned by society. We can't continue making excuses and normalizing what people are doing when it does not contribute to a decent society. When I've gone to Strickland Youth Center and spoken there, or with Donnie Warren, any group of kids, 9.9 out of 10 are there with a single female guardian, whether it's a mother, an aunt, or a grandmother. And these women, goodness, there's nothing wrong with wearing a bra. I know the whole 1970s feminism told a lot of women to stop shaving their armpits and stop wearing bras, but let's not include that in public. But it shows such a lack of respect for self that these kids are being raised in that environment. And that's why it is important that fathers and mothers take responsibility for their children. There are lessons that only a father can teach a daughter and a son. And there are only lessons that a mother can only teach a daughter and a son. And we have to get back to that. I didn't know what the word trad meant until yesterday, I think, listening to a documentary or something, and trad means traditional. Well, I agree. I think we should get back into traditional marriages, husbands and wives, following the words of the Holy Scripture. But even if you don't believe in Holy Scripture, at least admit that children have a better chance when their primary logic, learning, reading, concept of right and wrong, morality, begins in the home. And we have to make that normal again. We have to stop making excuses for why you have bad behavior. You have to stop making excuses for she only did it because, or I'm raising a single son, or I come from a broken home. Well, stop breaking your home. Who broke your homes? Stop the tradition. Not locally, but nationally, there have been some high-profile incidents involving young people and interactions with police and interactions with each other, and we get so caught up in the color of skin and who participated when the first question we need to ask is, well, why are they even in that situation? Hey, I'm all for justice for everything, but justice just means fairness. So if we're going to give justice to one side, we have to give justice to all sides, fairness to everyone. And until we began holding young people, the parents of young people responsible, by saying, are you really teaching him or her how to be a contributor, a positive contributor to society? So the questions should begin at home. The support should come from, we have any text, the support should come from outside of home. And whatever is repeated by everyone else should only be what home is stating. Primary social programs and law enforcement shouldn't be teaching your children how to tie their shoes and shut up in a public place. What you got on the text line there, Leanne?
All right. We have no name. I hate to see people throw trash out in the park. Just 10 feet from the can.
That is aggravating.
I see that a lot.
Yeah, a piles of trash next to a trash can.
Yeah, you can see the trash can. This says, JY, we hear that the statistics show that violent crime is down, but having lived in Mobile my entire adult life, it certainly does seem to be the case. I understand the perception, but when we see multiple shootings and deaths occurring, what seems to be weekly, it's hard to believe that this type of crime is down. And that was Adam.
And that's why Chief Jones, I had him speak to what perception is, because the news is going to play that. Not saying it doesn't occur. And you are only as safe as you feel, Adam. So I understand. But there is, per 1,000 people, a diminishing crime. And I'll pick up that topic. We'll read some more text when we come back from this break. Thank you, Adam.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile with your host, Mr. Mobile. I'm filling in for Sean. Let's read some text, Leanne, in this final segment. I want to say that Sheriff Paul Birch is coming on at the top of the hour, the next segment. And, of course, we're going to talk about Pritchard, Alabama. That is a big topic, popular topic. He's coming on the show to hopefully give us some insight and give us some information on things we don't know. But what do we have on the text line?
Okay, we have Sean, not that Sean, because, you know, he's
yeah,
where
he's mopping the floor.
We can't tell.
Right.
He says it's so hot, he saw a dog chasing a cat, and they were both just walking.
Boom, be here all week. Excellent. What else you got?
Let's see. A big part of the perception of the city being bad is because of all the urban outdoorsmen. All of the city, when you have a couple of cracked out druggies on every major intersection, it makes our city look worse than it is. Also, I've told Sean, if the city wants quick, easy way to fix a lot of the crime, pull over all the unregistered vehicles and enforce panhandler laws or the vandalism and over the litter that they do.
Hey, I'm all
That's
for
Michael.
It. Michael, I'm all for anything with these hobos and bums and vagrants on the street corner. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court thought that it would be best to say that that's a First Amendment right, that they can beg. I wish we would have legislation in our city government that they have to have vendor's licenses and reflective vests and force that. Yeah, you can do it, but you have to do it within these rules, in these confines, and in this area. I think we can legislate that. But we'll have to vote for people or encourage the people that we voted for to do it. What else you got, Leanne?
Well, Squirrel Vereen. That's hard to say.
It is.
He says, some of us aren't so dumb to think a headline isn't about a crime outside Mobile. We also don't attribute crime numbers to the police or expect them to stop it. We need to hear the chief talking about tough, about the criminal element and the system and culture enabling that.
Agreed. And that's, it's kind of hard. I'm not making excuses for the department or the city, but it's hard for a public official to get into social climates. I'll say that there's a subculture of gun violence involving young black men in Mobile, due mostly in part to broken families. That is what we're dealing with when we talk about the violent crime statistically and historically that affects or is affected, perpetrated by a disproportionately relative to population of the young black men in Mobile. That is a fact. That is the truth. So that's why Men United Against Violence is saying that, trying to draw more attention and encourage more people to admit there is a problem with it. What else you got?
Ultra Runner says the local downward crime trend seems to be mirrored nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any national changes, like deporting illegals, impacting our area?
I'm not sure that had a great influence in Mobile. Thinking back to the violent crimes that we've had, and again, 80% of them are young black men, and 90% of their victims were young black men. Unless we're deporting more people from Mississippi from Tillman's Corner, I don't think anyone here illegally affected our violent crime in Mobile to the point that we'd have double-digit decrease. So, no, I don't think that had an influence here.
Right. I will say that last night I wrote a news story about seven people being arrested mm-hmm. in a sex thing in Spanish Fork.
Right.
And two of them were held by ICE.
Oh, my. Wonderful. So, good. They'll go back. Good riddance.
Let's see. JY.
Yes. I'm listening.
I wrote that one.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you must be trying to read something I wrote about handwriting. My handwriting is terrible.
Let's see. This one doesn't have a name, but it's, I hate to see people throw their trash out in parking lots just 10 feet from the can.
Yeah. And in some areas, it's worse than others because it's tolerated. That's a cultural issue, that you would tolerate filthy streets. I know when I've gone to Pensacola, they still write like red light camera tickets in Pensacola. I'm going to challenge it, but it's a clean city because the culture there is clean. We have to change our culture here in Mobile to make it cleaner.
Right. If you live within the city limits of Mobile and you suspect your neighbor may be selling drugs, should we contact MPD or the sheriff's department? And is there a way you can do this anonymously?
Of course.
Yep.
You can call the non-emergency number 251-208-7211 and report any activity you have. And even go further than that, that once you call that number, ask for a narcotics detective or narcotics secretary and give that information directly to them. So, of course, you can do that, and they'll never say your name.
He goes on to say, even if you do it online, as the sheriff's department says, they can still see your IP address, so it's not truly anonymous.
Well, that's why you can make a phone call. It's no problem at all. Call the non-emergency number and give your information.
Okay. And let's see. Buddy says, here's a good example of what's wrong with our society today. I was getting gas at a station on Three Notch. A black man in his 30s pumping gas on the other side of the pump from me took it upon himself to unzip and start relieving himself right there at the pump. Then when I said something, he got mad at me. All I could say was, that was nasty.
and that's exactly right. We live in a society now that the home life in most of these people are raised does not teach shame. It doesn't teach respect. It doesn't teach a sense of community. And not only did he disrespect everyone by doing it, but whoever pulls up next is going to have to smell his dehydrated kidney spilled on the ground, because if he does that, you know he's not drinking enough water. So what else do you got?
Okay, CB Carl says, you talk about the family being an important part of teaching young people couth. I also believe the surprising lack of national pride amongst the youth in this 250th Independence Day is mostly due to bad parental guidance.
Everything starts at home. When I attended school, and my years were at Mobile County Public School System, we had civics courses. We understood Constitution. We understood our duty and responsibility as citizens. We knew the three parts of government. We understood that we had to, we knew what voting meant. We knew what our constitutional rights meant, not just civil rights, but our constitutional rights. We knew the name of our governor. So, yeah, there hasn't been an emphasis. In fact, I would say there's been an attack on on being an American and being proud American, because we've been dissected so much based on color, ethnicity, race, religion, and sexual preference. Just be an American. Let's just try that one time on July 4th.
That would be great. Mr. Mobile, the problem is children raising children.
And you're absolutely right. I've said that, and I'll continue saying it. Though my parents divorced when I was 12 or 13, the influence my father had on my life until my mother walked out on us and he came back, I'll never forget it. So we have to get back to being mature and taking responsibility. We're coming up on our break. Stick around. The sheriff of Mobile County will be here, Paul Birch, and we'll be talking about Pritchard. Thank you, guys.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome to Midday Mobile. I am your host, John Mr. Mobile Young, filling in for Sean Sullivan. He's on house arrest. He's been tearing tags off mattress again, so he has an ankle monitor. I have holding on the line Sheriff Paul Birch, and keeping with the tradition of some of the topics that Sean talks about on Midday Mobile, we're going to talk about what's going on in Pritchard, Alabama. We've seen it on the news, but we have the sheriff on now just to tell us about what's going on and what can we expect. Sheriff, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, John.
Thank you for being here, Sheriff. What in the world is going on in Pritchard? We know an officer was arrested. We know why, or some of the reasons why he was arrested. But what is going on now? The department is closed?
No, the physical building is being held under a search warrant for an undetermined period of time, probably at least another 6 months.
Goodness.
Because the evidence room and other spaces within that building are in such disarray. There's, you know, I want to say evidence, but there are items, possible evidence, just thrown everywhere, basically. Some items are tagged, some are not. So, you know, when we started this process, I believe it was around June 16th, 17th, and we identified how bad it was, and we have to go through each and every item, try to identify where it came from, you know, whether it's evidence, whether it's recovered, stolen, that hasn't been returned to the owners. It's a mess. They starting on the rape kits this morning, and there's dozens of those that are just kind of tossed about in a room. I believe there's a number of them that's never been sent to forensics. And you know, I've never seen anything like it.
Right.
In 37 years, I've never seen anything like that on storing what should be evidence.
How are you able to determine what piece of property goes to which case? Do you have access to their reporting system or case number system?
Well, we do. That was part of the search warrant. You know, I will say it's not, you know, the most technologically up-to-date system, but, you know, we're really trying to we have to run the serial number on every single gun. So far, we've got about 736
guns,
I believe. Some tagged, some not. We're just under 4,000 individual just pieces of we'll call it evidence for now, or property.
And that means a gold chain or a ranch or any random item.
Yeah, you know, and again, we didn't, at least I personally didn't see a lot of that kind of stuff. It was mostly firearms, some tools, and just random property.
And you're going through an archaic filing system to try to pair it with victims or suspects.
Exactly. And it's very tedious. But again, you said the right word. A lot of those items will be tied to a victim, and they deserve to have evidence, you know, preserved with integrity as their case moves forward.
Will the sheriff's department do the investigating and prosecuting from that point? Or will you force?
We are. Yeah, we are. And we've been doing the homicides for a while. And a lot of those are shootings and homicides. But, you know, what just kind of give you an idea of what it looks like. As items are identified, they're photographed, categorized, you know, everything's documented through our system. And then those items are physically moved to another location to be stored properly. And, you know, we've bought a few climate-controlled, you know, storage containers and put some shelves in them, and we'll be putting items there, especially biological evidence, you know, that I would say most of those have probably been degraded because of the way they're stored, but you never know, so we're going to put them where they're supposed to be in the order they're supposed to be in, and you know, the ones that haven't been sent off to forensics, we'll send those off. And
Sheriff, are some of these pieces of evidence or property just trashed and you'll not be able to utilize them in any way?
Yes, that's fair to say.
So there's someone out there that might not get their property back or might not, you just won't be able to investigate the crime. This is tragic on some. I started my career in Pritchard in 92, you know, and it's just heartbreaking for me personally when I think about Yvonne Baldwin and Frank Dees and Leslie Nobles and Robert Parrish, the people that I came up under, that the pride that they had in their work and what the effort that they attempted to instill in us, the seeds they planted in us. There are plenty of officers on MPD that started in PA.
I've got a number of deputies that started, right, you know, with Pritchard. So,
what do you think was the decline to lead to this?
Lack of leadership. I mean, there's no nice way to say it. There's lack of leadership. You know, there are some things that, you know, I'm not going to say publicly to embarrass anybody, but I've seen I shouldn't say seen. You know, good sources have reported years long of corruption with various officers there. And, you know, for the longest time it was allegations. You know, now one of the main offenders is in custody, and, you know, there are others, and they'll be identified, and, you know, they'll be brought to justice as well.
Well, you brought that up. I have a list of questions. So you're stating here on Midday Mobile that there are other officers that will be facing indictment or even criminal charges.
Yes, I think that's fair to say, you know, based on, you know, information I've had in the past and, you know, what we're seeing throughout this investigation. And yes.
I'm sure you can't answer it, but how far up and how long, how far up does this go? It's past administrations, you think, or past?
Yeah, that is something I can't get into.
Okay. Who's going to pay for the Connex boxes? Is that coming out of the Sheriff's Department's budget?
We purchased them, and that's the way a lot of this, you know, is starting to come together. We purchased the Connex boxes, but we're being reimbursed, you know, by the feds. And the feds are covering the cost of, and again, these come in the form of reimbursements. That's just how the government works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cost of providing the physical security, you know, for the evidence room while we're conducting this search and relocating the property. So that will be reimbursed. And we've applied to several grants that I believe will offset a good bit of the cost with the overtime providing patrol and law enforcement services out there.
Okay. Will you stay on for the next segment, Sheriff?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Hey, send us your text messages for and questions that you want to ask the sheriff or just make statements. 253-343-0106. Thank you, guys.
ABA and this station. You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we're back to Midday Mobile with Mr. Mobile. I have Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch on the line. If you have something you want to ask the sheriff or say, send us a text or call 251-343-0106. Sheriff, county taken over all of the city of Pritchard's municipal functions, or only the police department?
Only the police department, and they're still functioning to a degree. You know, the historically the sheriff's office does not work traffic accidents, never has, and that's true, you know, around most of the state. So Pritchard PD is still conducting traffic accident investigations, and you know, they're patrolling, being visible, but we're responding to the calls for service. And what we've seen over the last 2 weeks, the citizens, when we respond to a call, have physically came out and hugged the deputies just for showing up.
Right.
And just the positive response has been really overwhelming. I get emails, texts, messages left through communications thanking us for being there.
Makes a commentary on the type of service or lack of service they'd been receiving before that.
It was. I mean, that I don't know if you call it a policy, but a rule, they wouldn't even respond to misdemeanor calls.
You mean?
Like, just not show up. Like not even dispatch the call. And they were being told that when someone called in to dispatch. And, you know, just, I mean, the citizens there deserve the same quality of law enforcement services.
My Lord.
Every citizen in Mobile County does.
I did not realize it was that bad that they wouldn't dispatch to a theft of property or shoplifting.
Yeah. I mean, we've taken over cases through the last several years, you know, like well-established businesses would, you know, take a huge financial loss on a burglary, and, you know, where there's evidence left behind and they've not shown up for 2, 3, 4 days. And so the business owners will call us and say, can y'all please, you know, come, you know, we're trying to keep this evidence secure, but we're still running the business. And so we've done that probably a dozen times just in the last year.
So this is a contribution to the city falling apart, that businesses are fleeing because they don't have adequate service.
That's fair to say.
Right.
I'm sure there's a number of factors that go into that, but, you know, I would say lack, you know, that's your most basic function as a municipality or, you know, any city or county government is to provide public safety.
You know, I had that on my list to ask you, how has the public or the citizens of Pritchard received you? And it's been mostly positive.
It's been 100%
positive. 100% positive. How have the Pritchard police officers received the SO out there?
They're understanding. Let's put it that way.
Right. And you said earlier that you had a 6-month schedule. Are you ready to go longer than 6 months if necessary? I know it's expensive.
If necessary. No, what I'm saying is it's going to take 6 months just to complete the inventory and relocation of all the property within that property evidence room.
Goodness.
As far as operations in Pritchard, I don't have a timeline for that. It's just dependent on so many other factors, you know, some of which I can't talk about.
Right.
But that's going to be probably a longer-term situation.
I know you said earlier that you had never seen, but even when you went there and saw it, was it worse than you anticipated, or said, yeah, this is about what I figured?
Oh, no. It was a lot worse than what I anticipated. A lot worse. And one thing I do want to say, and I think it's important for everyone to know, especially, you know, citizens in Pritchard, the mayor is doing her best. You know, she's cooperating. She embraces our assistance. And, you know, so she is really has the best interests of Pritchard at heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is doing the best that she can with what she has to work with right now.
All right. Well, since you brought the mayor up, why hasn't she fired the chief? Or is there something you can't answer?
No, that's, you know, I don't know why. Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you, you know, if I were sitting in those shoes, he would have been gone. But not anyone who has failed that miserably, just on the condition of that property room, would have been enough for me to terminate somebody.
Right, because ultimately you want the public to have faith in you and believe in you.
Absolutely.
You think Peek might go over there and be acting chief or public safety director for a while and help him straighten it out? Could you volunteer?
Who's that now?
Yes, Deputy Chief Peek, Chief Deputy. Andrew?
I'm not going to let him get away from here.
Don't tell him I suggested that. I think I hold him in high regards. What are our text lines saying, Leanne? I'm sure somebody wants to say something to the sheriff, but I'm just baffled. I'm befuddled how that place could, in 34 years, go to the esteemed and pride, because Pritchard Police Department, people, all departments locally had respect for the PPD, because they knew when they got an officer from there, they were coming to their new department well-trained and ready to go tonight.
There's an unnamed texter that says, thanks to Mobile County Sheriff's Office and all the other brave law enforcement entities for what they do. This needs to be a clarion call for citizens who have villainized policemen. What the sheriff is doing benefits Pritchard's community. Citizens there need a partner with them in combating crime.
Sheriff, somebody's giving you a big thank you.
Well, thank you, you know, for that text. And I will say, just the couple of weeks that we've been there, you know, we've seen, I think just by our mere presence and showing up on calls, we've seen a reduction already in calls for service. And just presence, as you know, Johnson, does a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, you know, for the first 2 weeks, saturate real heavily. And so they knew we were there. It's paid off.
Jason says, will previous mayor Jimmy Gardner be held accountable?
That is not up to me.
Okay. And would the sheriff say that the workload on the sheriff versus a chief of PD is far higher? Are there ways that it could be easier for the workload between the leaderships?
Well, and I've said this in the past in other venues, but, you know, sheriff's office is uniquely different than a municipal police agency. You know, a police agency is just that. They provide a law enforcement service, you know, to answer calls, conduct investigations, and you know, work traffic offenses. Sheriff's office, you know, we have all those, but we also have a civil division that serves about 46,000 papers a year, between subpoenas and court orders. And we also have a jail with, as of this morning, had 1,642 inmates in it. And
good so grief.
That's what's very uniquely different, you know, from a sheriff's office versus, you know, a chief of police or police agency. And you know, what's also different, and sometimes this has to be taken into account, is a chief still has to answer to a mayor, a council, and sometimes a public safety director. A sheriff answers to the people, period. And so that's uniquely different or that's what's uniquely different between the two agencies or organizations.
Anyone else, Leanne?
This Pritchard situation isn't new. This is from Michael. He says that it's been on and off again for 40 years, and I've seen several texts about that saying, you know, this has been a problem for a long time. They haven't been able to manage money or anything else.
And you hit on that earlier, Sheriff. You said it's just been a leadership problem at its root and its cause, right?
Yeah, I mean, any failure in as what we've seen here, it points directly to leadership, you know, or lack thereof.
Well, thank you, Sheriff, for coming on behalf of the people of Pritchard, Alabama. Thank you for the job you guys are doing.
Absolutely. And you know, y'all call us if you need us, and we'll be there.
Thank you, Sheriff. We'll be right thank back. You. Midday Mobile with Mr. Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. I'm your host, Mr. Mobile, filling in for Sean, the mop boy, Sullivan, who's doing his community service right now. We'll be back soon. We had a message on the, we had the sheriff on talking about what's going on in Pritchard, Alabama, with their police department and their government. And we were taking texts, and we have a few more to get to. Leanne, will you do the honor?
Sure. This goal goes to Joel in Somerdale. Okay. And he says, why hasn't Pritchard been dissolved by Mobile? They know the people that get elected can't run things over there. It's the same thing. You stick them in a freaking restaurant. They destroy the restaurant. You think they can run a city? Come on, man.
The simple answer to that is it's too expensive for anyone. Is, let's say that the county, Saraland, Chickasaw, and Mobile divided Pritchard, right? The best parts are going to Saraland and the county, the places, the parts that have residents that pay taxes and business and a tax base. Mobile and Chickasaw would get the bigger infrastructure problems. The streets, for heaven's sakes, don't have street signs. There are potholes the size of Lizzo's thighs in many areas. They haven't had updated lighting systems. They have to repave the roads. The Pritchard Water Board would have to be recommissioned or decommissioned and then brought back online. You'd have to have new buildings, infrastructure, tearing down buildings, emptying lots, clearing lots of debris, dilapidated buildings that are falling on each other. It would just be too absolutely positively expensive for the city to be dissolved and taken up by local communities. Even it would take the federal government giving a few billion dollars to Chickasaw, Mobile, Saraland, and the Sheriff's Department, or Mobile County, to give them the money to rebuild the infrastructure. And you still haven't then talked about schools, you know, public transportation. It'd be super duper expensive. And I think that's the greater emphasis. And then what do you do with 20,000 new voters? How many more council seats does that create? How would you divide those council seats? It'd be a headache. That question has been asked for the last 30 years, I know. And if it didn't happen 30 years ago when Pritchard was still viable, still had a competent, rational, functioning government with mature people, at least able to think clearly, then it definitely won't happen now after this.
Okay, and Brad says, I've been wanting to ask this question of someone for a long time. From the police department, why do we not enforce hands-free driving in Mobile? If you pull over everybody that drives with their cell phone in their hand, you could fix the potholes in town with the ticket money.
I agree. I'm not in my capacity as my profession. I wish you would have texted earlier when the Chief Jackson and Chief Jones were here. But I am in agreement with you. I wish it would. The thoughtlessness and carelessness that Mobile drivers have is unrivaled. I mean, the drivers in New Orleans are pretty bad. They just drive really fast. The drivers in Mississippi drive like they're blind and walking backwards. But the thoughtlessness and selfishness that the drivers in Mobile have, it is unparalleled. And I understand writing tickets, but let's not forget the city of Mobile has a ticket forgiveness event every year now where you can get a ticket or two tickets, not pay them, get a suspended driver's license, and then the city will give you a party celebrating your tickets and fines being expedited and done away with. So while the city, while the ticket income might be beneficial, there's no guarantee that people will pay them, and there's no guarantee that the city government will enforce it to pay them.
Where does the ticket money go?
I don't know.
Oh. That was my little question.
I understand.
Let's see. Michael. Mobile doesn't want Pritchard people voting in our city, in our elections. They voted in what they currently have and would be, just do the same wherever they go.
Yeah, only about 27% of registered Alabamian voters vote in elections, and that's statewide. But it's just as low here in Mobile County that there would be very few people. So I think of the 20,000 people in Pritchard, maybe half are registered to vote, and only 2,000 of them would vote. Because their voter turnout is pretty darn low. So I'm not convinced they'd have any impact on Mobile elections. Or if even in their own communities, there would be enough viable candidates move into Pritchard to run for political office and stand a high chance of being elected. I don't think that's it. I think it's financial more than anything.
And Squirrel Vereen says, you know, he was talking about... He's talking about the text about urinating in public, and
right.
He said that urinating on public can get someone on the sex offender list.
Or a swift kick in the pants. You know, I would be highly offended if I was there alone, but especially if I'm with my family, and you don't have any more respect for public, for the people that you come in contact with in public. Maybe that I won't recommend or suggest it. I don't want to be held liable for it, but maybe most people have become so immune to being rude in public because they haven't, as in the words of Buford T. Justice, had a big punch right in the mouth in a while. Maybe we, those of us who are civilized, have decided that it is better for us to be quiet and silent and try to stay out of the way than it is to tell someone in a restaurant, hey, why don't you shut up and go outside and go away, or to tell someone relieving themselves at a gas station, you know, you're just dirty and nasty. If you'll do that in public, I know your house is filthy. You know, I guess that's a situation-by-situation thing, but we have made it too easy for people to do selfish, rude, inconsiderate things in public.
And mommy issues says, per capita, Alabama is near the top in gun deaths. Is that true?
No. There's not when cities like Chicago, Detroit, Memphis are sometimes tallying thousands of gun deaths a year. I will say Birmingham has had a decline. They may have their lowest year in a few years in homicides, but even theirs are twice as many per year that the city of Mobile have. So I find that hard to believe. I'm not familiar with it, but I know that there are plenty of cities nationally, or states nationally, that have cities that have one city in that state has triple, quadruple the number of homicides in throughout the state of Alabama.
Okay, and Jim B. says, I heard Sean's opinion yesterday on the Supreme Court birthright citizenship decision. He wants to know what yours is.
Is that where stating that people that are born here are citizens here? You know, that's a tough one, because oftentimes the argument about the Constitution, it was written at that time, and it was written for slaves born in the United States to be considered full citizens, which made sense. Fast forwarding to 2026, I think it has been abused. I think people have taken advantage of it. So mine would be more of a case-by-case situation and not so broadly that anybody that's born here is a citizen, and it's also that anyone that's born here isn't a citizen. Because just talking to a buddy of mine who's in construction, he's hired people that didn't always take the right path to get here, but now they are productive citizens and contributing to society. They are paying taxes, payroll taxes, and have positive, strong families. Their children were born here. That's a positive contribution. Now, when we talk about someone coming here that isn't contributing to society, let alone being a criminal element in society and withdrawn, that person shouldn't be. So it can't be one size fits all when each individual, the sad part is that we use these phrases like illegal immigrant and asylum seeker, and depending on your political spectrum, but they're each individually, each case must be reviewed separately. So while I agree that people born on soil are citizens, but we also need to consider that, why are they on the soil, how they got on the soil, and what are they contributing to society right now?
Okay, and this one doesn't have a name either, but they say, you had mentioned the civics and history you learned in public school. What do you think is happening in the schools today that recent graduates and people in their 20s can't answer the most basic questions regarding these subjects?
We'll answer that after the break, because that one's going to take me a little while. Thank you, guys. Midday Mobile with your host, Mr. Mobile, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I really have to tell everyone that Sean Sullivan has the best lead-in music on this station. I'm a big classic rock fan, and he has some really good guitar riffs. We left off with a text message. Leanne, would you mind reading it again, and I'll respond?
Sure. You had mentioned the civics and the history you learned in public school. What do you think is happening in the schools today that recent graduates and people in their 20s can't answer the most basic questions regarding those subjects?
Public school has never been really about teaching or educating our children. It's been taught, it was designed by Hearing Forward to make sure that we were able to work on an assembly line. Go read it for yourself. But in the 70s, when I was in elementary school at Orchard, the teachers had to have a lesson plan, meaning they had to plan each day the curriculum for what they were going to teach, and it was individualized based on the teacher and what her students were able to do. Well, somewhere around the 80s or 90s, it became standardized, and they stopped teaching things like phonics, how to break down a word and read it. They taught whole words, and you just sort of figured it out. And then you fast forward to 2000, they had the Common Core math, that it wasn't just 4 plus 4. It was put 4 items in this corner and 4 items in that corner and 4 in the triangle and then count. And then they took away cursive handwriting. They don't teach children cursive writing anymore. So there's just been one step after then, No Child Left Behind, meaning that the most important thing were standardized test scores and moving children to the next grade, even if they had not accomplished the basic curriculum for the grade they're in. So what is occurring now, what we're seeing now, is 20 years of dumbing our kids down, of public education only training kids enough to be a useful idiot or a criminal. Some kids go to school and gain an education, but I'll bet if you follow those kids home, there's an emphasis in the home on education. So the school systems aren't teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic anymore. It's teaching social programming and how to feel good and how to identify and acknowledge people. Many of these kids aren't receiving a high school diploma because they didn't accomplish a grade. Many of them are receiving certificates of attendance. meaning that you've been in school 13 or 14 years and they just have to give you a piece of paper. The jubilation you see, the excessive jubilation you see at so many graduations is performative. Yeah, the kids couldn't read or spell diploma. These kids can't count past 10. They can barely spell or read their own name or standardize English. So I believe it was intentional to make people stupider. If you look at the movie Idiocracy, it was a documentary. It explains this, that you can't put a square peg in a triangular hole. These basic life skills of communication and socialization are no longer emphasized. You're no longer taught to sit and communicate or get into a circle and discuss whatever the topic is, or, hey, here's a feather. Each of you have to come up with an idea of what you will do with this feather. Or having at the beginning of class, when you bring, what was it called, Leanne? When you bring a toy and talk about it at the beginning of class, show and tell. Yeah, show and tell. That's no longer feasible. You aren't taught how to write the letter A cursively, uppercase, lowercase, and then write a word in cursive, only removing the pen from the paper after you've completed the word, then going back and crossing your T's and dotting your I's. You're no longer taught to think critically by reading a story in your literature class and being told to compare and contrast. What was your thoughts on this story? Who was the antagonist? Who was the protagonist? What's the theme? It's no longer being taught because all they care about are graduation rates. They only care about moving your kid to the next class. And we're back to my original theme of parents holding each other accountable, because when on graduation day, when he's sent a notice home, little Johnny doesn't get is told that he's not graduating. You should have known that little Johnny missed 100 days of school. You should have known that Johnny scored a 7 on his math test and a 3 on his language arts test. You should have known little Johnny had been suspended and had not attended class. You cannot show up at that time when little Johnny is about to be, he can't walk across the stage, and think that your theatrics and antics will suddenly make little Johnny literate. And literacy, Leanne, is not just being able to read something. It's reading it, comprehending it, and then repeating it back or explaining it to someone. So yes, there's a failure in our public schools, nationally and internationally, that American kids are falling further and further behind. What else you got?
It's plain disrespectful for seemingly grown, mature men wearing ball caps and curse words out in the public.
I agree. There's a failure. Men aren't growing. Boys aren't growing up anymore. There are men my age, and I'm 55, who still wear ball caps, who are wearing ripped and torn skinny leg jeans. Look, I'm too big to wear skinny leg jeans. First, I can't fit them. And second, I look like a popsicle. I look like a fudge bar with a little stick and then my big butt sticking out of the top of it. But it's the lack of maturity because society stopped expecting boys to grow up. We stopped expecting boys to think like a child, behave as a child, but when you become a man, to put away those childish things. I absolutely agree with you. I make an effort and a point not to wear athletic gear in public anymore because I want to look different. And there might be a time for us to begin separating ourselves from the lack of mature people, from the people who decides the uneducation and ignorance is more important or looking cool or being in style. That maybe we don't need a breakthrough, we need a break up.
And let's see, Squirrel Vereen says, when I was in fifth grade at the Mobile Public School, we had to memorize the start of the Declaration of Independence. We were also keeping up with the gubernatorial elections that year.
I agree, the preamble to the Constitution. Listen, not only do our kids in school need to read it, but our politicians should be able to read and recite the preamble to the Constitution and explain it to us. Anyone we elect should have to do the same thing and take a test. I remember being in the fifth grade at Craighead, and it was completely different after growing up and attending Orchard. The environment and the culture at Craighead was completely different. The teachers cared, but the environment in the school was different. But there still was an emphasis on education. And we have to get back to that. And we need more male teachers. We need more male principals to show these boys how to grow up. I agree that men have gotten stuck into a perpetual cycle of puberty. They're playing video games all day long. They're inarticulable. They can't shake hands. They walk around with their gingerbread man underwear showing. They don't get haircuts anymore. They wear gold chains and smell like weed and talk about they're a killer, but can't spell this, that, or them. So, yeah, I agree with you. Our society is failing, and it starts at home.
Ricardo Montalban says, years ago, I took my wife to the dumb waiter restaurant for dinner. She went outside and for something, and a homeless person was taking a leak around South Conception and Dauphin Street. As you can tell, it really ruined the mood.
And that's, we become so comfortable with the homeless here. Listen, I know the state of Alabama closed down more mental health facilities than any other state in the nation. And now the money has been given outsourced to other mental health facilities that keep people in group homes. But we need to build another mental health facility and need to get these people off our streets. Downtown Mobile, 30 years ago, was vibrant. You could go in and you were hanging out. But now I am reluctant to go downtown Mobile at night because I'm usually asleep by 8. But just the homeless, vagrant beggars laying in the park, laying on the side of the road, they're asleep, they're smelly, they look weird, and sometimes they're threatening. But a hot, soapy rag will solve most of those problems. One more.
Yeah, one more. When I go downtown, we leave early.
Right.
Because of the mess that happens.
Right.
Let's see. Jim B. says, thank you for your thoughtful answer on the birthright citizenship.
Anytime. Check me out Monday night on my own show, Tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile at 8 p.m. on this station, FM Talk 106.5. Thank you, guys. Tell Sean what you think about me. If you like what I said, tell Sean. If you don't like what I said, tell Leanne. Thank you, guys.
You're going to get me in trouble.